this is Neil Burns from Draw the Line. You're listening to Monday Night Talk on WATD. I'm back in the saddle again, baby.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and we want to thank our former Brockton mayor and attorney, author, Jack Units. Check out the book, Urban Mayor, Making a City Work. It's fantastic. I've had a chance to kind of peruse it, and I can't wait to get to the, end.
This is one book I'm definitely going to buy. Should be on the shelf of every municipality somewhere.
Okay. All right. Probably the next book you might want to read, depending on when they start writing it, is about how to solve the foreclosure crisis through eminent domain. We actually have joining us right now, we have Grace Ross is in studio. She, of course, I believe you're the founder of the Massachusetts Alliance Against Predatory
One
Lending.
One of the founders.
One of, and also former gubernatorial candidates. Yep.
You can read my book sometime.
Really? We'll have to have you in and we'll have to do a book review on it. And we'll make Joe Rossi read it.
Actually, it's a great read, easy read. Okay. Maybe you won't like it. I don't know. But it's easy to read.
And I believe joining us on the phone line is Brockton City Council, Councilor-at-Large Jay Stewart. JC, are you there?
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, and you're going to kill me, but I am on the bus on my way home, and I hope it's not too noisy.
Not yet.
Hey, I'd rather have you on the bus and on the phone line than not have you at all.
Very cool.
And I'm glad that you're both back to join us and give us kind of an update. Last time we had talked was, you know, the big problem that we're seeing not only in the city of Brockton but in a lot of communities is what to do regarding foreclosures.
Your last guest was talking about his property values having dropped $200,000. Mm. That's why we're here.
And you know, last we knew that there was going to be, a committee formed in the city of Brockton. And that there were going to be key players put on this panel, and there was going to be discussions, maybe a vote.
Not yet.
Not a vote just yet. Where do things stand?
Jace, you want to do it?
Do things stand?
Yeah, cool. So, those things are happening. We have a committee of 10. It includes real estate agents, local bankers, grassroots individuals, union leaders, city officials. So it's a very good mix of key stakeholders in this issue. We've had two meetings, and the last one was last week, and it was really a deep dive into the legalities of a municipality using eminent domain to seize mortgages. Because as you know, Kevin, typically eminent domain is used for the seizure of real property. And so it was a very interesting conversation. We had to extend the conversation to a second meeting, which is being held this coming Thursday. But I still believe we're on the right side of the issue, not just simply ethically and morally, but also legally.
What are the particular roadblocks or hurdles that you guys are finding that you're going to have to go either get over or find a way to be able to work through?
So we got halfway through the legal conversation, so we're kind of, you know, Jason and I have our guess where it's going. But so remember, we're trying to figure out if Brockton can beneficially take the underwater mortgages that were securitized, right? Those toxic mortgage bundles things that people were talking about a few years ago, still out there. And in Brockton, that looks like about 2,300 mortgages. And I'm always reminded by people when we talk about eminent domain and we use the term take, what it really is you pay fair market value for whatever the property is that the municipality is going to take. So it's not taking in the sense that you get nothing for it, because people always panic about that. And to remind people that we're talking about the mortgages, not the properties. So the homeowners stay in their home. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about trying to solve this gap that your previous speaker was talking about between a mortgage that might have been on a wildly overvalued home and what is presently realistic.
Jace? Go ahead. continued racing?
Well, so we figured out that we needed to identify any legal issues, how the financing would work, and how you would actually kind of do the nuts and bolts of the city would purchase the mortgages, that brings them down to present day value immediately, and then how does the city manage that and then hand them over refinanced to hopefully local banks. So we had three areas that we were trying to explore, and we got halfway through the legal one.
Hmm.
We aren't through the other ones yet.
Okay. So the other ones that we're waiting, that you're going to be, when's the next, do we have a next meeting already scheduled, Jace?
It's this Thursday, 6:30. I don't have a location yet, but it looks like it will be back at the Eastside Ranch Library in Brockton. And the important point is that, as part of Grace's introduction of this, we're focusing on securitized mortgages because those individuals who have a mortgage that was, you know, they got a mortgage through their bank or a mortgage company, and when you sign those documents, it basically says that the lender can resell, repackage your mortgage anytime they want to. And for those folks who have had their mortgages securitized in these investments, you literally have no one to talk to if you're interested in refinancing. So you could have fantastic credit that you're interested in refinancing at a lower rate, but you're underwater. There's no way to get out of that mortgage because no other bank is going to refinance at the value of the mortgage. They're going to look at the price of the value of the property. And so the only way to essentially refinance, there are only two options. One is to go into foreclosure, which is not a good option at all. The other is to have someone, some entity like the city, come in and use eminent domain to literally sort of free up this contract that has a lot of homeowners stuck. Even those homeowners who are making their payments on time but clearly are paying way too much for the mortgages but simply cannot get out of it because these mortgages have been securitized.
I guess I have one quick question. I know Grace wanted to kind of jump on this. My concern is if you know, all this work is going to be done to hopefully keep somebody in their home, is there some kind of caveat that there's going to be work done with the individual where basically they become a good homeowner and somebody who is going to, that we don't find them in this kind of trouble again?
Well, so remember, this is actually sort of somewhat the background. One of the issues, the legal issues, and I'm going to edge into that because that's what the last meeting was about, is you can use eminent domain only for public purposes. So one of the things that there's been sort of a conversation about is how is this a public purpose, right? These are individual mortgages. And so the important issue with the homeowner to remember is this isn't a situation, this isn't an individual who like screwed up and got themselves into this situation.
Right.
We have an entire world economy that's sort of resting in the balance on what were essentially incredibly bad loans, and even the bad loans don't really explain the whole picture because the real issue was that the subprime loans were used to ramp up the value of the market to an unrealistic level. So we had this sort of this housing bubble that was phantom value, as some people refer to it, that ramped it all up really high. So what we're trying to do, and actually will happen in this process somewhere, is that because the mortgages are going to get purchased by the city, but then they get refinanced to a new local bank or some other lender, in a refinance process, of course, you have to re-go through someone's credit, and you got to make sure that everything's lined up right. So some folks may end up going to a credit counselor or a housing counselor to get that all in line so that they can qualify for the new financing. So it happens as part of the natural process in a process like this, that people will have their credit checked and their financial situation. So it's not a blank check. You have
to qualify.
Kevin, what's
interesting about your question, though, is it's sort of like when people typically talk about government waste or fraud, and the individual who's put up as the example of terrible government waste is the single mother with kids who misused her EBT card or something like that. When we know that most of the waste in government is happening at the corporate military level, that totally dwarfs any other kind of misuse of government funds. So the real question should be, why were banks given trillions of dollars And when that money was given to them, funded by taxpayers, that there were not mandates for these loans to be rewritten to begin with. And so that work was not done. They were given these sort of bailouts to shore up their bottom lines, but there was no mandate to correct what was wrong in terms of the loans that were written by these institutions. And so I say that only because I think the whole conversation typically is skewed about who the victim is, who the victims are, and what's the best route to correct the situation. And so, unfortunately, because nothing was done at the federal level and very little bit is done at the state level to really get to the core of, you know, modifying these loans and seeking, you know, principal reduction, you know, unfortunately, the city of Brock is now faced with having to try to figure this out when, in fact, we really shouldn't be in the position of trying to work through these issues at this kind of level.
Except that what has been said is that these contracts that allowed these mortgages to be bundled together are legal nightmares and have all these limitations that allow for very little flexibility. And what is true is municipalities have the power to use eminent domain. And that puts municipalities in a unique position to fix this problem that not other levels of government necessarily have the power to do that. The state doesn't have the power to do what eminent domain can do. And the feds, who do have the power, aren't using it. So
now, what if you one of these mortgages that you take, and in the process of taking it, just for example, the homeowner bails completely. Is there something in that process that, and so now, I guess, in that case, the city would be left with it?
Well, right. So there's, I think that particular scenario is very unlikely. Turns out, I actually did some research because one of the local Brockton bankers was sort of saying, people walk away from these mortgages all the time. So I thought I'd go find out.
Yeah.
Turns out that there are a subset of folks who walk away. They're almost always the better-to-do folks the fact that their credit has been ruined, they still have other financial means for getting a new home. Whereas for most folks, this is the only answer.
This is the
only way they're going to solve things. What is true is there will be a certain number of folks, and I personally, looking at the statistics, think it's going to be a very small number, who can't afford the refi, right? They're refinanced. They don't have the capacity anymore. Some, you know, both of them disabled workers now or something like that. So that is where there may be a gap between the goal of, oh, let's, you know, bring these down to present-day value and then refinance them, and the folks who can't afford that refinance. And then what would happen is there are two options. Either the city holds it, and remember, the city might decide, for instance, and this is a whole other area of research, to transfer that mortgage to, like, the local housing authority. Maybe they would own the property and rent to the folks who were in it, or rent to someone else. But the other possibility is, apparently with eminent domain, the city also could turn the property back. So when a city takes eminent domain, this is one of the things we had explained to us last Thursday. What they do is they basically put something on the deed that says we're now in control of this deed, and so they can apparently, in a certain period of time, also take that off and leave the deed where it was.
Is it like a temporary lien?
It's actually a taking. So the city has it. Once that happens, there's just going to be a fight, and there no doubt will be in quite a number of cases over whether what the city paid for that was real market value or not. But
what are the questions since this has become a topic of conversation over the past a couple of months? What are the questions that you guys are hearing constantly that maybe somebody's listening right now that maybe you can kind of give an answer to, so it's not something that is a redundancy when you meet up with someone who goes, eminent domain, you're going to take it. What are you talking about? What do you hear, Grace? What do you hear, Jace?
I think what I'm hearing, that may not be necessarily from the perspective of the regular person listening to this or reading about this story, is this idea that these are investors who, you know, honestly, you know, put their money into these different funds, and that we're going to come in and kind of disrupt their investment strategy, which isn't fair. And I would normally be concerned about that, except to say that I think actually we're sort of shoring up their investment, because the homes that we're seeking to, the mortgages that we're seeking to acquire, if you look at the data, they're very likely to go into foreclosure. So we're coming in at a point where we're paying more in value at market rate value now, even though it's less than the mortgage value when it was originally purchased. But it, we're paying more for the mortgage or the property or the asset now than we would be if that home were to go into foreclosure.
And because of the way the statistics work on that, the statistics we're looking at are for a pool, right? A certain number of them won't go into foreclosure, but because nobody has a crystal ball that tells us which ones are which, what we do know is that Fannie Mae has done a research of the market, and they're saying that about these loans are likely to go 72% loss. So that's taking the whole pool and saying, okay, some of these are going to foreclose and some aren't, but the majority are going to foreclose and the loss is really big. And so we don't have to know loan by loan. What we know is that overall we're going to be adding value into these trusts that are all these different mortgages. So, you know, we take out your mortgage, let's say one or two mortgages that Brockton residents have that are underwater, and we're going to replace those with cash at the present value. So that trust actually takes out a risky loan, a couple of risky loans, and instead gets cash at the value it is now, not the value it would be, for instance, if it was foreclosed. So it's actually, we think, lowering the risk for the investors who have an interest in these mortgage pools that are affected by this. So we actually think it's going to stabilize them in a sense too, a little bit, because it's only a few mortgages, but...
Now, in 2008, before the crash, we saw the highest property values of at any point ever. And that started to climb right after September 11th, after all the incentives that were given for home ownership.
It was more about the mortgage industry figuring out how to do this. But yes,
okay,
that's the right time period.
Yeah, time period. Right after September 11th. So there was a good 7 years where home values increased to a point where they skyrocketed to where they burst. So do you think that we're at a point now where home values are finally realistic? Or do you think there's a climb or a decline that's still going on?
My favorite moment when this task force first came together, and I think we did Jace had us do just a little go-round on stuff, was the realtor who's joined us, who I suspect Jace knows. I don't really know him. Somebody asked him that question, do you think things are stabilizing or not? And he said, you know, if the federal government does the cuts that are projected under the sequester, the impact on our economy in terms of, I mean, everybody talks about program cuts, but what matters is that the federal government's going to be taking a huge amount of money out of the economy and cutting those jobs. He said, you know, if the whole economy starts going south, the fact that things have an appearance that they've sort of stabilized around foreclosures right now things are going to get worse. So separate from sort of the foreclosures alone, if you look at the overall economic situation, we're heading into a double dip. You heard it here. I'm putting my prediction in now. And
a double dip recession?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we're headed into the next round.
What do you feel is triggering this?
The sequester. The federal cuts are going to be huge. And I don't know if you saw that they're...
You don't think that's all smoke and mirrors?
Not at all. Okay. If you look at the numbers, they're already cutting the number of traffic control controllers so that's, the airlines are in deep trouble. So I mean, when you start cutting airlines, that's like pretty significant economic impact. But be that as it may, what we do know, and the statistics are held out in Plymouth County and in Brockton in particular, is that the folks who are at the first formal step in the foreclosure process, the petitions, are way up. So that's just, you know, down the pipeline a little bit from foreclosure, and that's a bad sign.
Well, you know what's interesting? Not to get sidebarred too much on the economic factors, but it is interesting.
Stay on topic.
I am in the room.
Stay on topic.
I take people there.
No, but that's okay, because I think you bring up a good point where there's been prediction of a double dip for quite some time now. Right. And what I heard recently was, you know, we see the Dow closing at the highest levels it ever has. However, you know, there's a lot of concern that we're entering another bubble right now.
Exactly.
And that would be indicated by the massive, all of a sudden, and economists have been saying this for a couple of weeks now, all of a sudden we see this massive surge in the Dow. And where is that coming from? Well, nobody really knows. Yeah, nobody really knows where it's coming from, and that indicates some type of bubble happening.
Yeah, those phantom values are very dangerous. We actually have lost more in property value since the crash started than they lost during the Great Depression. So we really, the indicators, when you look at if you slice off the top wealthy section of our economy and look at everybody else, we are not any better off than we were.
No.
So it's not a good sign. And I do think that this is going to be very interesting for Brockton, who's going to have done the research. They're going to be in a position to decide, do we go forward with this or not? Mm. I suspect, just as everybody else is looking around going, oh my God, we're in trouble, what creative solutions could there be? And it's going to put Brockton in a position where it has a tool in its belt that it was going to get to choose whether to use or not, at a time when I think a lot of folks are going to be looking around going, oh my God, we need new tools. So I'm hopeful that if this does happen, and these are predictions I keep hoping I'll be wrong about, hasn't happened yet, but maybe it will this time. But I think Brockton's going to be very happy that it started this now.
Chase, I got to ask you, depending on what happens with this committee and what you guys decide and look at, is there a time that this is going to have to go back to the city's finance committee, and is it going to have to go to a vote not only for the finance committee to get approval, but then go on to the city council for an overall vote, or do we start at ordinance and work our way up?
Good question. So we would have to. So the idea is that we would have recommendations back to the city council by May. That was the original schedule. But frankly, it's taking us longer than I had anticipated getting through the process.
So yeah, but you want to
the May target, we'll be able to meet it.
But Jace, if I can interject, you're saying that it's taken longer than you thought, but you want to be kind of careful. So even if it does take longer, it's okay, right?
We'll take the time that's necessary to have a robust discovery process and then go back to the city council with the best recommendation.
Yeah.
So whenever that happens, it certainly will happen before September, but it may drag out over the summer. We were trying to avoid the summer because the city council is on a summer schedule and they meet sort of more frequently, so it was just harder to get traction. But yeah, so we go back to the finance committee with the recommendation. I'm assuming another series of lengthy discussions, public hearings at that point. Assuming that it passes, it would then be recommended favorably to the full city council. There will be a vote there and a request for some type of order from the city council to have this done. That would have to go through a number of readings, and so that's the process. So all things positive, I would imagine that some action would start to take place by the end of the calendar year.
I guess probably the question that I would want to ask is if they do participate in this, how favorable, is there going to be a favorable, is it strictly a market rate what you get for an interest rate, or does it change because you're an at-risk person?
So what we hope is going to happen, and this is going to come out in the next couple of sessions after we get through the legal, I don't know what you'd call this right now, tangle, to sort that out. Once that's sorted out, is the financing piece. And what should be happening is that the city will not choose this by, number 22 on this street and number 75 on that street, right? It's any mortgage that will fit into the criteria of being underwater and securitized. And so the city will then target those, take those, and when the homeowner gets involved, it will be to see if they've got the right credit and income to be refinanced. Those refinances, because people's credit's already been hurt, we're looking at a special pool of funding through FHA that would underwrite these mortgages. So they become a very safe investment for whatever bank picks them up, and people will have the protection of an FHA underwriting. It's a special pool that allows for specifically written down mortgages to be underwritten, and the criteria are a little looser because of the impact the just getting this far can be on people's credit and stuff like that. So it will be a good pool and a safe pool for the local banks and affordable for people.
So Kevin, you had asked a question earlier about, is the market getting better, improving, and so is this necessary? It was sort of kind of what I read into the question. And I think when you look at generations ago, people purchased homes and they stayed in those homes for their entire lives. But we know that recent history shows that folks purchase homes. They usually use homes as an investment. They're in a home for 5 to 15 years, and the idea is they're building equity to then move up to their next home or do something differently. And so that whole process is stuck now because folks are underwater. So even if things were to start to stabilize, and that's take the best case scenario that can happen, that's happening, and that it will continue to happen. that doesn't necessarily mean a recovery when you're underwater. So if someone has a mortgage that's $300,000 and their house is now valued at, you know, $200,000. But let's assume that things are better, so now it's going to stabilize at $220,000. They're still underwater at $80,000. And those are the individuals who are making their payments, but who are struggling to make those payments because they're artificially high. And those are the individuals who are likely to, at some point, go into foreclosure. And Grace has this really wonderful graph about, you know, looking at the last big bust in the economy, the real estate bust, and that part of the SNL crisis. And it took, I believe, and Grace, you can talk to the numbers.
14 years.
14 years to get out of that. And that was a decline that was, you know, insignificant compared to the kind of decline that we're looking at now.
One-fifth of the bubble we had in this last round.
Okay. Well, I need you two to promise me that this, we're far from done talking about this. We're getting ready to come up to another break, and we have our guest from the New England Championship Wrestling, both Sheldon Goldberg and Johnny Thunder are here. We're going to talk with them in a couple of minutes. But I need you guys to come back probably once again in maybe 4 or 5 weeks.
Absolutely, and I encourage folks to watch this, because if it works, if we figure out how to make this work legally and financially, this could be a way out for huge sectors of our state that are really suffering from the whole foreclosure and market crash.
Chase, do you have anything in closing?
I just want to thank you for you know, giving us the opportunity to speak, because as you know, sort of public momentum is, this is a political issue. I don't personally think it's going to be a legal issue. Some of the financing is something that I think we need to work through, but I think it's very doable. I think the biggest challenge is politically making this happen, and so the fact that we're able to talk through it with the public and people become more aware is probably more strategic than anything else.
All right. Well, we'll definitely be talking with you in the next, probably, like I said, 4 or 5 weeks. We'll revisit this and find out where things stand and how the committee is doing, but we're going to step away when we come back.
Thank you both.
NECW, stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.